right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, final week of the preseason edition of the show. And quite literally, tonight would have been the final preseason game. If there had been a preseason, the Bucks would have been in Cleveland taking on the Browns tonight. Obviously, there was no preseason, but it's still the final week of all those things, and the Bucks do have a game. And, I mean, it doesn't feel like it because we didn't have any lead-up with preseason games, but the Buccaneers do have a game 10 days from today. I'm recording this on Thursday morning here at One Game Day Place. They'll take on the Saints in the Superdome. That's next Sunday. But this week, we're getting down to roster cutdowns. I mean, we've got so much to talk about on this show today because, first of all, there's a lot going on right now. But second of all, I haven't done a show in a few weeks. I want you guys to know, and I really mean it this time because school has started and the natural rhythms of the weekly routine that have been absent for so long are finally returning, and I can record my show in peace and quiet. I'm not dealing with the kids. I mean, literally, I've told you this on other shows before, been with my kids just like 6 months straight, just all the time. And so school's a welcome back to what is a nice routine. And so we're going to clear our throat today, folks, because we got a lot to get to. Of course, we've got the game Sunday, next Sunday against the Saints. We've got the roster cutdowns. We've got Leonard Fournette, now a Buccaneer, that coming down last night. Many, many more things, both in the world of the Bucs, in the world of the NFL, and in the world of Tampa sports, because I want to talk about that too. Our show, as always, and this hasn't changed, is brought to you by our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, where if you're looking for a car, they've adjusted with the times, which everybody has had to do. So if you want to go over there, there's plenty of room for social distancing. They got a whole great setup. Of course, you know by now, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry is where they're located, where they've always been located. They're on the east side of the road, just north of the Hillsborough Overpass on Dale Mabry. Go check it out. See the entire inventory. All the COVID precautions are taken. Plenty of room. If you don't want to do that, though, go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. It's spelled C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. Browse around there. If you want to test drive something, they will bring it to your house or your office or wherever, and you can test drive it that way if you're not comfortable going in. They're absolutely glad to do that. And if you do end up making a purchase, same thing. They'll deliver it right to you. You don't have to leave your home except for the test drive if you want to do that around your block or wherever. And everything's done for you. So no matter what you're thinking about or what you're comfortable with, they will accommodate you. Check them out, BillCurryFord.com, or go see them in person a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. And Raymond James Stadium is the site of another Buccaneer practice going on this morning. They might be done. Well, I don't think they're done by now. It's about 10:45 on Thursday morning, like I said, when I'm recording this. You may be listening to this anytime in the next week. But, you know, we're getting down to it now. And we've had this whole month of August that we're so used to preseason games. And I don't know. I mean, everybody always poo-pooed the preseason. Every August we'd hear it. Oh, God, the preseason. Just get it over with already. This sucks. You know, usually took a series or two after the first one started in the first week of August and everyone's over it and ready for the regular season. And, of course, the regular season's what we all want. But now that we actually got to do it this way, obviously, the hand of the league was forced, but we got to try a season without any preseason games, just playing the first game next Sunday. Do you actually think that's good? Because like I've always said, I always admonish people every August when I hear all the complaining about the preseason. You know, it's not instead of regular season football. To me, it's in addition to regular season football. And preseason football, not as good as regular season football, but it's better than no football, right? Like tonight, if I told you the Bucks could play a preseason game against the Browns like they were scheduled to, you'd probably take that, wouldn't you? I certainly would. And I certainly would have taken the other three. Now, I've gone over this before. I think they should play two or three preseason games instead of four. But yeah, I've missed football this month. Going on Twitter and seeing all the reporters, including your own Joe Bucks fan account, tweeting out pictures or clips of things taken from practices. That's cool, but that's, I want to watch a game on TV. And by the way, kudos to WFLA, who normally airs the Bucks preseason games on local television when they haven't been able to do that this year. On Friday nights, they've still been running vintage Buck games. I enjoyed the Bucks-Rams Monday Nighter from 2000 a few weeks ago, which is, to me, still the most exciting Bucks game that's been played at Raymond James Stadium. That was the Warwick Dunn lateral to Sean King game, and then Warwick Dunn scoring the touchdown at the end of the game. Just an awesome game, awesome atmosphere. They showed that. Of course, this past Friday, they showed the Eagles game, the NFC Championship in 2002. And then this Friday, tomorrow, they're going to show the Super Bowl. They set it all to lead up right to the Super Bowl. Then regular season starts next week. And I tell you what, even though I can pull those games up on YouTube and watch them anytime I want to, there's something about like sitting down in your living room and flipping around, not realizing it's on, and then going, whoa, hey, it's the Eagles game from 2002. And just immediately tossing the remote behind you and hearing it crash to the ground, all the batteries popping out, and saying, I'm good, I don't need this for a couple hours. I'm going to sit here and watch this. Especially me with an 8-year-old son and a 5-year-old daughter who didn't get to live through that, who I am now like trying to teach them the history of our teams and tell them about all the things that happened before they were born. I've been loving it. So kudos to them. Although, again, it's not live football. We do have some of that tonight with college football, by the way. I'm very excited for it. And that's another thing that's not the same. This is normally the opening night for college football, and it's normally got a bunch of games, including a few high-profile ones. Tonight we get Central Arkansas and UAB, and we get South Alabama and Southern Miss. And you know what? My ass is going to be right there behind me. I'm recording this in my kitchen. My couch right there, that's where I'm going to be watching those games tonight. Completely dialed in. And we got to wait longer for some of the Power 5 teams. But anyway, looking at what's going on right now, and before I get to the Bucks, I just want to mention this because it's never happened before, and it's contingent on the Bucks being good, I suppose, for it to be officially happening. And somebody brought it up to me the other day, and I hadn't thought about it really, because this is just such a weird year and nothing feels normal, but this is the first time, assuming the Bucks are as good as everybody thinks they're going to be, and I'm not convinced, but if the Bucks do end up being a playoff team, this is the first time ever, like not first time since anything, this is the first time ever in Tampa sports history that all three of our teams have been good. And we don't have the buzz around it that we normally would. Like if the Lightning were in the middle of a playoff run right now, under normal circumstances, playing games at Amalie Arena, or as I like to call it, the Ice Palace, because that's what it's called. But if they were playing playoff games there, and then, you know, people were going to the games, and we had the buzz around town, I don't feel as much of a buzz right now around town about the Lightning being in the Eastern Conference Final as there would be if they were actually doing that here. But they're doing that. And they're amazing, by the way. 5 Eastern Conference Final appearances in 10 seasons, 4 in the last 6. And for Tampa sports and what we've been used to just across the board for most of our existence as a sports town, it still boggles my mind. You know, the Lightning, this is not just going back the past few years where they have been good. This is going back to their inception. So counting all those bad years they had to start out, like most expansion teams have, or used to have, counting all of it, if you go back to the first season in Lightning history to now, the Lightning have been in the conference final as much or more than all but 2 teams in the NHL. Only the Red Wings and the Penguins have been to more conference finals than the Lightning have since the Lightning have existed. That stat blew my mind the other day, because that's not usually a spot. You know, Tampa teams have their moments here and there, but to rank highly across a period of decades in any sport is not something we do. But they're really good right now. The Tampa Bay Rays, and it's not the playoffs yet, but they have the second best record in baseball. They are kicking the absolute just bleep out of everybody in their path, especially the New York Yankees. And if you want to talk about a complete role reversal, like even in years where the Rays are good, usually the Yankees or the Red Sox or someone's like the arch nemesis, they're still the big, bad, evil empire we can't get over the hump for. No, not this year. The Rays are treating the Yankees the same way they treat the Blue Jays or the Marlins or any other redheaded stepchild. Just beat them for the 8th time in 10 games last night. It's crazy. Like, if the Bucks end up being a double-digit win team, we've never had that. We have never had all three of our teams be good at the same time. So if you're not just a Bucks fan but a Tampa sports fan, I figure a lot of you listening to this probably are, then this would normally be just sheer ecstasy right now, but again, it doesn't feel quite the same. It's really a shame it's happening during all this because it doesn't feel the same. You know, we can't go to the games if they do end up, if the Lightning win a championship or the Rays or the Bucks, there's probably not going to be a parade or any of the things you're used to. I'm getting ahead of myself, but I'm just saying, like, this is weird, and yet it's also really cool. And somebody said another thing the other day that I didn't think about, but right now, if you had to rank all the pro sports cities, all the pro sports metro areas, just based on all their teams, not just any one of them, based on all of them, Tampa Bay could very well be number one. Like, you could make an argument that Tampa Bay is number one, with the Lightning being in the final four of their league, with the Rays being the best team in the American League and the second best team behind the Dodgers in all of baseball. And again, the Bucks, it's contingent upon the Bucks, but if the Bucks end up being 11-5 or something like that, then they too, I mean, you couldn't, there'd be no weak points, right? We'd have to be number one. And somebody else said LA, and LA, I mean, the Dodgers, like we just mentioned, their NBA teams, which we don't have, but both their NBA teams are the top two seeds in the Western Conference playoffs. The football, the Rams and Chargers are both decent. And then they're the thing with LA is the Kings, their hockey team, they blow. They're terrible. See, they have a weak point. We don't have any weak points. Of course, LA has more teams. But either way, the point is not arguing about who's better. It's the point that we are in the top two or three of all American cities sports-wise right now. And we've had moments with one or the other. Rays World Series, okay, great, but the Lightning weren't that good back then, and the Bucks weren't that good back then. Bucks Super Bowl, Lightning Stanley Cup. But it's never lined up like this. So the Bucks will be the ones now to have their turn starting next Sunday and see if they can keep it going. And they made a splash yesterday, if you want to call it a splash. And they went ahead and brought in Leonard Fournette, who the Jaguars moved on from a few days ago. And so we've got now all this huge news all over the country. Like, as Bucks fans, signing Leonard Fournette would have been news no matter what. But this was big national news yesterday when it became known. It was last night that Fournette tweeted out a picture of himself in a Bucks uniform. And it started to become, you know, a real thing. And everybody's talking about, like, the Bucks are the story. And we talked about this before. You know, now that we have Tom Brady, now that we have Rob Gronkowski, now that the national media actually gives a crap about us, which they never have, and we'll go back to not giving a... Make no mistake, the minute Brady and Gronkowski and them are gone again, we'll go right back. Even if we win the Super Bowl, we'll go right back to just being little old turd squat Tampa Bay that no one cares about. And I'm fine with that, because I like having the chip on my shoulder about it. But remember, they don't care about us, they don't care about you, they care about the stars that we have now. So because of that, the Bucks making a signing of Fournette became huge news around the NFL, not just huge news around here. And imagine if the 2019 Bucks, same team and everything, but if it was last season, a year ago, if they signed Fournette in the offseason after the Jags released him, if they signed a guy that 31 other teams didn't think was worth it to sign, and the Bucks didn't give up anything, they didn't have to make a trade, he's a free agent, they're paying him, you know, a few million. And I'm not complaining about it at all, I'm just saying, like, if we did that last season, it'd be like, oh yeah, Fournette, he's garbage. The Jags didn't even want him, so the Bucks picked him up. But instead it's, wow, another weapon for Tom Brady. Can you believe this Bucks offense? Oh my God. You know, that's the narrative instead. And again, I want to stress right now, because I've gone through this before about running backs in general, not Fournette specifically, but I've gone through this before. And I want to stress now, I am not complaining about this signing. I'm fine with it. They didn't give up a draft pick or anything. It's not an extraordinary amount of money or anything like that. And Leonard Fournette could prove quite useful in certain situations or certain times or whatever. But folks, let's take a deep breath, and I want you to repeat the mantra that we always repeat here. It's just a running back, okay? The running back position in general is simply not that important. It's not nearly as important as everyone makes it out to be. And even if you believe that it is, Leonard Fournette is just another running back. You can get them anywhere, and they're pretty interchangeable. So it's not like, to me, the team has changed much in the past 24 hours or that the offense has changed much in the past 24 hours. Everybody's going nuts. I mean, the hoopla, everybody's like, man, can you believe the Bucks just added? It's like the Bucks are participating in their own fantasy draft, which it kind of is like that. I mean, you know, you sit there and you do your fantasy draft every year and you take all these disparate people from different teams and you throw them all on your fantasy team. The Bucks are kind of doing that. They have McCoy. Yeah, we get Fournette too. Gronkowski, sure, draft him. You know, that's what it feels like. But if you look at his efficiency numbers, I'm not talking about his total numbers because he's got a lot of volume numbers. So I know he had 1,700 yards. I know about the 76 catches. I know about all that. But if you look at his actual efficiency numbers, his DVOA, his rushing DOA, and his pass-catching DVOA, all those things, they are pretty middle of the pack. And that's kind of being generous because they're kind of below average. And Thomas Bassinger, who is a friend of the show, has been a guest on this show, and who always keeps it real, whether you like him or not, and a lot of you don't like him, and whether you agree with him or not, he's not coming at you with anything more than numbers. And he tweeted it out yesterday. Yeah, I'm going to quote his tweet here. He says, "Leonard Fournette is not a quote-unquote weapon. Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, they are weapons. Fournette is at best a replacement-level running back, a guy." He goes on to post his 2019 stats. His rushing DVOA, if you don't know what DVOA is, I mean, I would encourage you to go look it up. There's a good explanation for it. It's a very telling stat. It's a very all-encompassing stat. But anyway, that placed 34th amongst running backs. His receiving DVOA, 42nd. And that was with 76 catches. So what does that tell you? And he did. He caught a lot of balls, mostly checkdowns. He's not a pass-catching running back just because he caught a lot of passes, if that makes sense. He's not James White to Tom Brady, the way James White was. He's not a guy you can move around and split out in the slot or whatever. He's got hands. He's got the ability to catch the ball, and that can be useful. But, again, this is not like the splash signing everyone making it out to be. The efficiency numbers are mostly meh. Okay? And, you know, he's not a guy that can make you miss. He's not that type of running back. He's a guy who's going to run and you know, pound you and things. And that's fine. I mean, again, I'm not saying he can't be useful. I'm just saying, I agree that with what Thomas Bassinger is saying, he's just another guy. And even if he was a little bit better than that, he's still a running back. And I'm telling you right now, like, the running back situation for the Bucks is not going to determine, or it's not going to have a very large role in determining what the 2020 Tampa Bay Buccaneers end up being or how far they end up going, okay? And that's true for almost every team, not just the Bucks. Numbers have borne this out. If I get a chance here after the show, I'll post some more to Twitter. There have been articles written about it. There have been studies into it. In this day and age, I'm not talking about ever, Emmitt Smith was important to the Cowboys. Barry Sanders was important to the Lions, sure. In this day and age, in the NFL, not in football, because in college football or high school, it's different. In the NFL, the running back position does not influence the outcome of a game that much. The running game in general does not. It just doesn't. I mean, numbers have borne this out. It's not just an opinion. And the same goes for your kicker, by the way. That was another piece of news today, as the Bucks, or not today, but the Bucks brought in Ryan Succop to, I guess you could say, compete with Matt Yale, although it feels like if they're going to bring in a new kicker at this point, it's because that guy's going to be the kicker. So I don't know if Gay's very long for Tampa Bay or not. Elliott Fry already got cut. Both guys had been struggling in what was supposed to be a competition between those two. And when it wasn't working out, they brought in Succop. And here he comes now, probably to be the starting kicker. And again, that's not going to determine what kind of season the 2020 Tampa Bay Buccaneers have either. But if you're curious about the running back position now, the Bucs have six of them. They've got Ronald Jones. They've got LeSean McCoy. Now Fournette as well. Dare Ogunbowale is still here. That's four. And they drafted two. Keshawn Vaughn in the third round, who reportedly has just been okay in camp. And Ray Calais in the seventh round from Louisiana Lafayette. And they could keep all of them. I mean, there's a way to do it. People think that, you know, there was talking about, oh, they're going to cut McCoy now. McCoy has been told, according to reports, that he's not going anywhere just because of this signing. Calais could go on the practice squad, which used to be 10, but with everything going on in 2020, they upped it to 16 this year. So there's more room to stash guys there, and you can even protect four of them where other teams can't pluck them off your practice squad. So you can put Calais there, keep the other five on the active roster. Ogunbowale is still valuable on special teams. Jones, McCoy, and Fournette are going to be here. And then Keshawn Vaughn, I mean, I don't think they're going to cut a third-round draft pick, even if he has been just so-so in camp so far. So I could see it. Greg Allman agrees. He tweeted about it, the Bucks beat writer for The Athletic. So we'll see. But either way, again, I'm not complaining about the Fournette signing because they didn't give up anything of value except money, which it wasn't a ton. But I'm just not I don't care that much that the Bucks signed Fournette. I'm not thinking of the 2020 Bucks in a different light as compared to what I was thinking, 24 hours ago or something like that. So, with all that said, email me if you want to. The email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com. That's bobbygameday@yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can get me @bobbygameday. Either way, it would have been exciting to go see these things unfold in person, and we still may get the chance. The news coming down earlier this week that there will be no fans at the first two games at Raymond James Stadium. And so that's not like a huge thing that came as a shock. But a lot of teams are saying they're going to have some fans, even the Dolphins, also located in Florida. And Dade and Broward County have both been a pretty, I don't want to say hot spot, but higher rates of infection for COVID than other places. And yet they're going the route of having, I can't remember the number, if it was 15 or 20,000, but something like that. And the NFL is doing this all like team by team, get to make their decision, whether it's the local government or state government where those teams are located or the teams themselves. They're letting everybody decide it for themselves. So you could have some teams with no fans, and the Bucks are going to be one of those, at least at first. And then you could have other teams having 20,000 people there. Nobody's going to have a full house, obviously, but it does vary. As for the NFC South, at least for the first few games, the Saints, Falcons, and Panthers are all doing the same thing the Bucks are doing. So if you're trying to parse this for competitive edge or something like that, I don't think it makes much of a difference. I heard some people complaining that there'll be a home field advantage now for the teams that have 20,000 versus the teams that have none. There's no precedent for all this. There's no sample size for all this in the past, so I honestly have no idea. But I really don't think having 20,000 people in the stands makes that much of a difference as opposed to none. For the Bucks, the two opening home games are the Panthers on September 20th and the Chargers on October 4th. So those will be without fans. The next possible date they could have fans, and this doesn't mean it's only going to be the first two. They could extend it. But as of now, they're only committing to no fans at the first two. So the first possible one is the Packers on October the 18th. That would be the third home game and the first with fans if they lift this or amend this policy after the first two games. And Bucks front office COO, I believe, Brian Ford, let out a statement saying, we'll reevaluate as we get closer to October 18th and see what the status is of everything going on in the state. Obviously, we all hope it gets better for many, many other reasons besides just football, but that's another one. So if you're a season ticket holder or somebody like that or somebody trying to get individual game tickets, this obviously narrows down the opportunities for that. I'll say this. They did a study. It's a book called Scorecasting. And if you ever have a chance to read it, I recommend it for a few different reasons. But it looked at a lot of the old, I don't want to say myths, but it looked at a lot of things that are commonly believed in sports, and it examined them more closely to try to figure out if they're true or not, or what's really causing them if they are true. And one of the biggest parts of the book is looking at home field advantage across sports. What is it? What does it deal with? And we're seeing this now in a bunch of sports because everybody's either playing with no fans or they're playing in bubbles where it's a neutral site and they're just designating one team or the other as the home team. But it's funny with Scorecasting, and this was kind of groundbreaking at the time and people have tried to build off it since then, they found that home field advantage has nothing to do with travel, has nothing to do with familiarity with your home. People say, these guys had to travel a long way and they're, this, that, and the other, or, they don't know this place as well as the home team does, or the crowd's going to get to them. That's a big one. The crowd does matter, but not the way you think it is. First, what they did, and this was just so interesting to me, I think I've talked about it before, but they looked at teams in cities where it's big cities that have more than one team, like the Knicks playing the Nets, or the Cubs playing the White Sox, or the Mets playing the Yankees. They looked at those type of games. So that way there's no issues with travel or sleeping in your own bed or anything like that. And are the Jets and the Giants playing in the same stadium? And they found that there was still home field advantage. Like, it didn't change across times when a team traveled a long way or went into a hostile environment versus when they were playing another team from their own city in the same arena they usually play in. The Clippers and Lakers are another one. And they parsed all these stats out and they looked at all these things that didn't change at all. between those games and your standard home visitor games where teams do travel. So they said, well, what is causing it? The only difference they could find was officiating. The officials act differently depending on home crowds. And they looked at this across all sport. Like in soccer, for example, when the home team was trailing by a goal in soccer, the referees added more extra time. You know, that's at the referee's discretion. They can add 2 minutes, 4 minutes, whatever. They added more extra time when the home team was down by a goal than when the home team was up by a goal. When the home team was up by a goal, they added much less time. And same with calling fouls and things like that. The road teams got called for more penalties. You know, whenever you have a game and you're officiating the game and there's fans over your shoulder, and every time somebody on the visiting team breathes on the home team guy, everybody in the crowd goes, whoa! They put their hands up. How? Are you kidding me? You're not calling that? They call it more. They really do. And they even found that stadiums where the fans are further away had this bias even more pronounced than like a soccer stadium that has a track around it where the seats are further away. Those didn't have it as pronounced. So it is the fans, but it's not the fans getting loud on 3rd and 8 when the home team's on defense. You know, we all love to do that and it's fun, but that doesn't actually do anything. I mean, maybe every once in a while you get a guy, you can't hear the snap count or something, jumps offside, but that isn't in the long run what does it. But home field crowds do still make a difference. The officiating is one of it. You're seeing it right now in the NHL playoffs. In the NHL playoffs that are going on in a bubble with no fans, you know how in the playoffs, they always have a lot fewer power plays than the regular season. It's officiated completely differently, even though the rules don't actually change. We all know they call things, you know, they're a lot more, less likely, I should say, to call penalties in playoff games. But now that there's no fans, first of all, the home teams aren't getting called at any different of a rate, but the road teams are getting called at a similar rate to the home teams, where it used to be home teams got many more power plays than road teams. So fans do influence that. Will 20,000 fans influence it? I am not sure, as opposed to zero. But it's not going to be having much to do with travel and things like that. Those are things that we seem to be able to figure out. And the Buccaneers, there's been Rick Stroud, the Bucs beat writer for the Tampa Bay Times, tweeted out a picture, and there's been other people tweeting pictures. They have put zip ties around blocks of seats to make them unavailable. So it looks like they were at least planning for fans there, and are still planning for fans at some point. And when they do, you know, the original plan, it sounded like it was going to be to remove seats, actually get out screwdrivers and take the seats out in certain places and then just have them socially distanced. And then now they've just got zip ties instead. It kind of reminds me of the story, and it's proven to be an old wives' tale since then, but there was always an old story that during the space race, like in the 1960s, you know, ink pens don't work in outer space because there's no gravity, and gravity is what pushes the ink down. And that's why even when you're like laying on your back and you try to write holding the pen upside down, it doesn't work, right? Pens don't work in space. So NASA supposedly spent millions of dollars trying to develop a special anti-gravity pen that would work even in outer space. Whereas in Russia, what did they do instead? They just used a pencil. That's how the old... And again, that's not a true story. That's an old wives' tale, but you may have heard that before. But it kind of reminded me of that. Because think about, like, unscrewing the seats. Think about how many man hours that would take to unscrew 40-something thousand seats. Take them all. I mean, it would take days and days. It would take all kinds. Then you got to store the seats somewhere. Just wrap zip ties around the ones you don't want used, then cut the zip ties when you're done. That's what they've done at Raymond James Stadium. Hopefully, they'll be cutting the zip ties soon. And in the meantime, we'll have to rely on the television, which a lot of us do anyway. I'm curious to see what football will be like without fans. Just watching last week's game, there's only been one game to go on right now, whereas all the other sports have been playing for a little while. But I was watching that FCS game between Central Arkansas and Austin Peay last week. It was the first college football game, and really the first football game of any kind at the college or pro level to be played since this all happened. And that's a game that would normally be played at a stadium that isn't exactly rocking anyway. So it didn't feel that different, honestly, watching it. It sucks not hearing the bands mainly. But I don't know what like a Monday night football game at the Superdome is going to feel like compared to what they usually feel like. And I know the NFL is talking about piping in the crowd noise just like all these other leagues have done. I'm against it. I've talked about this many times before. I don't like distorting reality. I don't like people's need to live in the world of the manufactured. I think drugs and alcohol explain a lot about society, because I think people, for whatever reason, have this deep-seated need to distort reality for themselves. So it's the same thing when I hear all these people going, oh man, I love the fake crowd noise. It feels so real. Like, I don't want something to feel real. I want the real thing to be what it is, even if it's not as good. And so, you know, having seen it now with the NHL games, they don't do it too badly. Like, it's not obnoxiously loud or anything. I really didn't like the idea that they were talking about, like, using CGI to make it look like fans were in the stands or something like that. And they'd bag that, even though they were talking about it. That was, to me, really stupid. But the NFL is going to use some background noise. And I think what they really want more than anything, they're not trying to make some fake atmosphere so much as they don't want just complete silence. Because that does, one, it sounds weird to some people, although to me it's fine. I just want to hear the game. But two, you know, you're going to hear a lot of things. And as far as broadcast partners go and things like that, I think that's the main concern more than anything. So if there can just be like a dull, muffled, almost, it doesn't even have to be crowd noise. It could just be white noise. It would probably be good enough. Just something that where when guys launch F-bombs or, you know, yell across the line of scrimmage at the other guy that he's coming to make him bleep his bleep all day long, you know, that type of thing, which goes on in a football field all the time, now you'd be able to hear it. And maybe somebody like HBO or somebody, you know, we should do that. Give me a feed that is just mics. Put it on pay cable if you need to, like I said, HBO or something like that. And I just let me hear it uncut. Just raw and uncut, baby. I grew up on a football sideline. My dad and my uncle were high school football coaches. I was the ball boy. Then I played. So, I mean, to me, it's great. I love the rhythms and the sounds of it. Obviously, it's not something you can sell the network executives. But I'll bet you if you had a feed for it on HBO, I mean, I know I'd watch it. Most of you probably would too, right? But anyway, that seems to be the plan. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. It's BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay anytime. Love hearing from you guys. Oh, the fridge schedules. I forgot I wanted to mention that here. I'm doing the fridge schedules again this year. I was waiting on purpose because I didn't want to type up a fridge schedule. And then, obviously, the schedule had the chance to change a bunch. Now that we're getting to the point where it looks like the schedule that's out there is the one they're going to play, I'll go ahead and type up the fridge schedules. And some of you know what I'm talking about. For those of you that don't, every year, it's kind of a little tradition I have. Going back to my grandmother always putting the schedule up on the refrigerator. She'd cut it out of the newspaper, and then she'd write X's for wins and O's for losses, and the score. And she did that for her whatever high school team my dad and my uncle were coaching. She did it for FSU, which is where she went to college, and she did it for the Bucks. So a few years ago, I started thinking, hey, first of all, it's not always in the newspaper the way I like it. It's like, why don't I just type my own schedule up on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper? And then a year or two after that, I said, hey, why not add some color to this? So I started putting the logos of all the teams on there. It's turned into a really nice thing. And then a couple years ago, I said, hey, why should I be the only one that has these? If you want a fridge schedule, email me. All it is a Microsoft Word file. Or actually, I think I have LibreOffice or whatever. Anyway, the point is, it's just a file. And you email me, I'll email it back to you, I'll attach it to the email. And then you can print it out, preferably on a color printer. Put it up on your fridge, put it in your office, wherever you want to put it. And I'll do some, I usually do the Gators and I do the Bucks. If you want an FSU one or if you want a USF one, and again, these things are still kind of up in the air, but I think they're pretty much set now. I'll punch up whatever you want. I enjoy doing it. It's kind of a hobby. So I'm going to type up the Bucks fridge schedule sometime this week. Now that we look like we're going to be playing the schedule that was actually released, email me if you want to, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com, and I will make you one. And of course, again, 10 days from now, it's the Bucks and the Saints. And, oh, by the way, another thing going back to what I was saying about with Leonard Fournette, Alvin Kamara. You know, that was the whole thing this week. There was word that he wasn't practicing with the Saints, that there was an issue. First of all, news has been coming out that they're working on a contract. Expect him to be there for the opener. I know a lot of people on Bucks Twitter got very excited hearing about the Alvin Kamara stuff because, oh, man, maybe he won't be there. Maybe they won't have him. And he's a hell of a player. But just like I said with Fournette, people don't realize this. Like, Alvin Kamara's good. He's just a running back in their system, just like Chris Ivory was, who had success, just like Pierre Thomas was, Mark Ingram, you know, all these guys. it's not the guy, it's the system. And so if he wasn't there for the week one opener, I mean, yeah, sure, I'd rather him not be there than be there, I guess, but it wouldn't have been that big of a deal. But expect him there when the Bucks take on the Saints. And it's going to be early, right out of the gate. We're going to learn a lot about this Bucks team. I will encourage this, and we'll talk more about it next week on the show because that'll be the show leading into week one. But especially with no preseason, we've seen nothing. And even if we had preseason, I would have done a bunch of shows talking about how you can't read anything into it, like I always do. But especially now, since we didn't even have that, let's not get carried away here, whatever happens in the first couple of weeks of the season. I mean, it's entirely possible that the Bucks go into New Orleans, come up short and lose, and go on to an amazing 12-4, 13-3 type season. It's also possible, as we know, because we've seen this happen in recent years a couple times, that the Bucks go into the Superdome early, look completely awesome, and oh my God, these guys are unbelievable, get a nice win to go 1-0, a road division win against the number one competitor to what you want, and then the Bucks end up still going 7-9 or something like that. That's happened too. So obviously we're all just frothing at the mouth at this point. We're dying for any semblance of football, any semblance of information. That's the thing. When you have football, you have information about your team. You have information about the other teams. None of us have any information. Even preseason information is at least something, and we don't even have that. So when there finally starts to be games, we're all going to just pounce right on whatever we see, and we're going to think this is the way it is. If Tom Brady looks good in the first game, he's still the man. We have a Hall of Famer, and there's no stopping us now. If he doesn't look good in the first game, oh my God, he's 43, he's over the hill, we can't do this, what were we thinking? You know, don't let either of those two things go too far in the extreme one way or the other. It's going to be a process, and none of these guys have played. I know you can practice live football all you want. You can do scrimmages. You can even go to the stadium and paint the lines on the field and put uniforms on like they've been doing. You cannot replicate a real football game that counts against an opponent that isn't your own teammates. You can't replicate that until you do it. And even in the preseason, you can't that doesn't count. You can't replicate it until you do it. So we got 10 days. We'll be back on this show next week, and we'll line all that up and get ready for week one. Of course, the Bucks roster will be set by then, as I don't think there's a ton of like controversial stuff. The reason I didn't talk more roster today, I don't think there's any like burning stories with the roster, you know, big name stuff. The running back thing, I think, you know, is probably the biggest one, and I don't think that they're going to get rid of it. I don't know how they plan to use the three guys they have, the three main guys they have, but Bruce Arians has been very clear that Ronald Jones is still the guy and that LeSean McCoy is still a part of this too, now Leonard Fournette as well. We'll see. But I wouldn't expect much of a surprise in the way of cuts or anything like that here when that comes down this weekend. We'll talk about it all next week. So I want to thank the Joes, as always, for giving me this platform. This is the number one place for Buccaneer coverage, and everything going on now, don't worry. The Joes are going to be there. Whether fans are there or not, it's not clear. The Joes are going to be there. Joe Bucks Fan is the number one place on the internet for Bucks coverage. Stay there. Thanks to our good friends and our sponsor at Bill Curry Ford, Sean Sullivan, the GM, my good friend. Check him out in person or go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. Thanks to all of you for listening. We are back in a routine now, folks. Just get used to the rhythm of it. I'll record on Thursday mornings. I'll do the shows, and we'll get ready for whatever is coming that weekend ahead. So enjoy your final weekend of 2020. I'd like to think, I won't jinx anything, but I'd like to think our final weekend without pro football, because after this weekend, things are going to start to get back to where we're used to them being. It's going to be a lot of fun. So be safe, have fun, whatever you do. I'll talk to you guys next week. In the meantime, that is your free stretch for the final week of the preseason. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks!